Welcome to the second quarter in the 17 periods of Bible history. We're going to go over studying Exodus and wandering in the wilderness. So y'all have had a break from learning the 17 periods. I didn't hear any of y'all saying them all quarter. No, that's fine, but we're going to go over them, all right? So, it's not working. Press the letter B. No, B. There you go. All right. So, before the flood, scattering of the people, the patriarchs, the Exodus, wandering in the wilderness, invasion and conquest, judges, united kingdom, divided kingdom, Judah alone, captivity, return from captivity, years of silence, life of Christ, early church, letters to the Christians. All right. This thing still ain't working. There it goes. All right. I think I was pressing the wrong button. All right. So finishing up Genesis, and we're not going to review through all that. I think Wayne did a real good job reviewing and going through that material. But in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, what was one of the last things, the last chapter in Genesis? He says, Joseph saying, "But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." Remember all the what his brothers had done to Joseph, right? And the cruelty, the meanness, the bullying is the new word these days. Everything they did to him, they meant it for evil, but what? God had a plan, didn't he? He used that in his overall plan. It was an important piece. God meant it for good in order to bring it about, as it is this day, to save many people alive. Book of Exodus is about, or one of the things it's about, is God saving his people. And God delivering and fulfilling a promise that he's made. We saw that promise, one of those promises. We saw those given to whom first? Abraham, right? Then passed on and given to Isaac, reiterated, given to Jacob, right? And Exodus is, we're going to see that the nation promise fulfilled. Very quickly, actually. All right? And also, in verse 24, Joseph says to them, "I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." So that's what God's going to do. It's in his plan. And he's going to bring them out. Now, how many of the family, Jacob's family, remember the circumstances that got Jacob and his family down there because of the famine, really. How many went down there? About 70-ish? Yeah, right? So, that's how many went down, and how many are they? And when Exodus opens up, look at verse 7. Read verse 7, and it says, "But the sons of Israel were fruitful, they increased greatly and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty so that the land was filled with them." Doesn't give us a number here, but it says the same thing about three or four times. They were fruitful, they increased, they multiplied, so I think with the restating the same thing so many times, they became a lot of people. And they were in the land of Israel. And what else happens as we open up Exodus? All right? a king, a Pharaoh rises up that what? He doesn't know Joseph. He doesn't know that he, or he doesn't recognize it. Wasn't that long ago, it seems like, but he doesn't recognize him, that's for sure. He doesn't know Joseph or appreciate the things that Joseph had done in saving Egypt from that famine and preparing them, following, again, God's plan. So they, in the beginning, what are the people of Israel? Or they're not even Israelites yet, are they? They're the Hebrews. But what are they? Are they a threat? You know, in Genesis, you know, when they move down, no, they're kind of guests of Pharaoh, aren't they? They're guests. They were invited in, brought in as guests. But by the opening of Exodus here, they've gone from being guests to being a threat, right? They're, at least from the point of the Pharaoh, the king there, he thinks they're a threat because they're growing up. Why does he think they're a threat? Yeah, that's right. It says also in verse 7 that they were becoming exceedingly mighty. So they were getting strong, a large number of them, and, you know, with increase in numbers, if all is not well and peaceful, then, you know, a revolt can happen. They can team up with enemies of Egypt and, you know, rise up against them. And if the numbers are there, you know, in this time, if the numbers are there, you know, that's a big part of it. All right. So he was afraid. And so he starts through several things to try to control them and to eliminate the threat, the perceived threat that he sees. So what does he start doing? He sets up taskmasters, right? And so, you know, it doesn't tell us how he went about this, but, you know, they had to be divided up. You know, the Hebrew people had to be divided up, sectioned up, quartered off, set under this taskmaster, set under this person, set under this person, and all of this was going on. You just imagine, maybe the fear and the intimidation and everything that's going on through this. You know, you can see families, you know, getting sectioned off and maybe split up, you know, and different things, but taskmasters set over them, and they put them to work, all right, for them, for the Pharaoh, for the kingdom, the empire that they've got there. So they are set up as slaves. And they're put to building. They do two things that it mentions right off. They set up at Ramesses and Pithom. Right? So Pithom and Ramesses, essentially, the Hebrews here, they build those cities as storage cities, all right, in verse 11. So they build up these cities for the Pharaoh in their labor. But instead of doing what he wanted, he didn't accomplish what he wanted with this. His idea was to keep them down and to suppress their numbers and get a control on them. But what happened? The opposite happened, didn't it? They, in verse 12, the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread out. So instead of keeping them confined, controlled, quartered off, like he was trying to do, it had the opposite effect. They grew stronger. They got more mighty, and they spread out even more. And but they compelled them, verse 13, the sons of Israel to labor rigorously and more work. So verse 14, they increased that. They made it harder. They made their lives bitter with hard labor and mortar and bricks, all kinds of labor in the field and all their labors, which they rigorously imposed on them. So does this sound like a pleasant life for the people here? No. Sounds pretty awful. Was there a plan? Did God have a plan in place? Yeah. Do we get any indication that they knew about this plan? I don't think so. Not yet. That the people themselves, other than God's promise that He's made to them. But what is, even when life is horrid for them, and it's bitter, and it's hard, and it's not easy, what was their job? What was their, you know, can they throw their hands up and say, you know, well, that's it. You know, kind of the advice was given to Job, curse God and die. You know, what else is there? You think some of the people, how long did this slavery go on, by the way? Give or take. About 400 years, right? Okay. Do you think some people were born into slavery and died into slavery? Their whole life, that's what it was, right? But did God have a plan? He did have a plan. Even if our whole lives are hard and tough and difficult, does God still have a plan? Think we can have some comfort in that? Even if, you know, our situation's pretty dire? We can't we? Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. And like you're saying, pass it from generation to generation. Teach it to our children. And what do those children see? For their whole lives, maybe. Nothing. No consequence of it or any results of it. But that's exactly right. Yes, that's exactly right. And you'll see in a minute, the title of some of these slides here in a minute I've got is Faith Under Fire. I stole that from Tracy. Tracy had that. But it really is faith under fire, because even though we may not can see the results of what God's plan is, and maybe we don't see them, but we know that God has promised, and in our case, we see the plan. We've got it laid out in front of us. I mean, we can see the congruity, from start to finish. I mean, we see the whole thing laid out. But even in this situation, in their situation, you know, faith needed to be present to see God, to know that He is in control. And, you know, that's lesson number two. God is in control through all this. Even with everything that happens, and it looks like, you know, things are going down and evil is winning against good, what's really happening? God's plan is being accomplished through this, and He's using all these things. All right, very good. The more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew, and Egypt continued growing in their dread. So He comes up with another plan to thwart them and to control them and to suppress the people here. And so what does He do? Yeah. So the midwives, when the Hebrew women are giving birth and they're on a birth stool, no epidurals for them, right? So when they were, the midwives, Pharaoh tells the midwives and lists a couple of them here, and he tells them what? Kill the boys, all right? Kill the baby boys. Girls can live. So what's the idea there? They can't raise up an army. They can't grow in strength and become mighty, you know. But with women, there's still a servitude that can more easily be suppressed. Is the idea. So he has them doing this, or he commands them to do this. Well, what do the midwives, who do the midwives fear? That's right. They fear God. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not afraid of Pharaoh. Because when Pharaoh sees what's happening and that none of the boys are dying, what are the midwives, what do they say? Yeah. Well, these Hebrew women, they're a lot stronger than the Egyptian women. They give birth before we even get there. Think that's total truth? No, the midwives, they were protecting. They were not doing what Pharaoh said. They were fearing God more than they were afraid of Pharaoh. There's a difference between fear and being afraid when we, you know, this context. All right. So he then gives the command to go out. And what does he expand it to do? Again, still trying to control, still trying to suppress this. What does the command go out from him? Yeah. All right. So now it's for everyone. It's not just midwives, but it's for any of the Egyptians anywhere. They see baby boys that are Hebrews. What are they to do? They're to kill them. Throw them in the river. Pretty harsh circumstances, doesn't it? It is very, very, you know, uncaring, very harsh. That's the command that goes out. And then we, at the end of this chapter, and beginning into the next one, we see one of these baby boys. What's going to be the end of him? He's thrown in the river, right? Well, that's not what happens. And, we see God's plan working all the way through this. Alright, so chapter 2 begins, and so a woman of the Hebrews gives birth. Her name's Jochebed. Her husband is Amram. She gives birth to a boy. And you know, it's just, you know, I think about these things. What is she thinking for 9 months? I mean, you ladies, can you imagine for 9 months, you know, being pregnant and knowing what the command is, what is going to happen, what is supposed to happen. And so she delivers the boy and she's in love with him. It's her baby. And what does she keeps him. She hides him secretly as long as she can until she can't keep him secret anymore. So what does she do? Yeah, maybe she does do what she's in the command. But Buford's saying that she throws him in the river. Well, so yeah, sort of. All right. Well, she wants to see him live. And she puts him out there for whatever will happen. All right? But she wants to see him live. And maybe her faith put him out there for God's will to be done. So she puts him out there, she makes the basket, puts him in it, puts it out in the river. And she and his daughter watches over to see what would happen. Well, so it comes along, Pharaoh's daughter happens along. She's going there to bathe, and she's got maidens there, and see the basket out there. So they go to she sends one over to get the basket, gets the basket, brings it back over to Pharaoh's daughter, opens it up, and there's a baby crying, a baby boy crying in it. They know it's one of the Hebrew, boys that's in this basket. And so she has compassion on this, on the baby. And, one of the traditions, by the way, this isn't in the Bible, one of the Jewish traditions says that she tried to get one of the maidens to be able to feed him, and it wasn't working. And that's when his sister, Miriam, says, "Hey, you know, I know someone who could do this, who can feed him and nurse him and help him grow." And so she goes and gets her mother and so it all works out where, quite ironically, instead of killing and, you know, throwing the baby in the river, Pharaoh is actually paying a Hebrew mother to take care of a baby Hebrew boy. Not at all what Pharaoh would have had happen, right? But Pharaoh's daughter works all this out. And so they're going to pay Moses' mother to take care of him and to bring him up. Okay, so again, here comes that fear thing. Were Moses' parents afraid of Pharaoh, of what he could do to them? Hebrews 11:23. Says that they were not afraid. All right? But we have to think about that a little bit. They weren't afraid so as to what? Keep them from doing what? From honoring, from fearing God. In other words, the fear, the whatever natural fear of what Pharaoh could do to them did not overcome them so that they would not obey God. It wasn't an overcoming fear. The way I kind of think about it. Y'all can read those. Chapter 11, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27 in there. And see what you think. But they obviously, she hid the baby because she knew what Pharaoh could do. Then she put him out there to try to save his life in some way. So, but the fear that the fear that she had wasn't overcoming it, because the faith in God, the fear of God was much more stronger in her, in them. Okay. That's right. That's right. That's right. She did know that if she kept him, what would happen eventually? He'd be found. So here was a chance, a very minute chance, you know, seemingly, for something good to happen. All right, very good. All right, so verse 10, Moses grows. And she brings him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son, and she named him Moses, because I drew him out of the water. Alright, so Moses grows up, and he grows up as an Egyptian in Pharaoh's house, and as a son of Pharaoh, as a adopted grandson of Pharaoh. And one of the other writers, extra biblical writers from the time period, Josephus, says that that during this time their learning, their knowledge was, you know, he would have learned all of the Egyptian ways, and you know, the Bible tells us that that he learned all the Egyptian knowledge and so forth, and it was to quite extent. And he goes on to say, Josephus goes on to say that Moses actually became a general, you know, a warrior, you know, in, you know, Israel, in there. So whether or not that happened, I don't know. But you can kind of think about that, as a possibility. But he grows up as an Egyptian, but what else does he know about? Because his mother had raised him. He knows he's a Hebrew, and he knows their ways. And turns out here, what do we know about his attitude toward the Hebrew people, his people? He has some compassion, exactly. Yeah, he has some feeling for them. He knows that he's really part of them more than he is, you know, an Egyptian. So can you imagine? You know, if you just imagine, you know, him being torn between those two things for a while. But the side of him, part of him that's Hebrew, is very strong, because look what he does. In verse 11 and 12, he looks out and he sees their hard labors of the people, and he sees an Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave. And what does he do? Who does he take sides? He's going to protect the Hebrew. And so he looks around, makes sure nobody's looking. And what does he do? He goes over and kills the Egyptian who is beating that slave. He takes a side irreversibly. He's not going to be able to go back from that action. All right? But for a moment he thinks he's hidden it. He thinks it's hidden, but he turns out, he finds out just a little bit later, there's two Hebrews fighting, and he talks to them and says, "Why are you fighting each other?" And what does the Hebrew say? What does one of them say? "You gonna kill us like you did the Egyptian? Bury us in the sand?" So he knows he's found out. So it's irreversible now. He's gotta leave. And in the next verse, Pharaoh finds out about it, knows about it, and he does. He flees. So the course of that event, of his actions there, sends him completely away from the Egyptians and that way of life that he knew, everything he had learned, sends him away. He flees to where? He goes to Midian, all right? Now, you think about his, you know, in Hebrews there, it says that Moses wasn't afraid of Pharaoh. Now, don't know whether the Hebrew writer was talking about, you know, these events or maybe later on, you know, in Moses dealing with the Egyptians. But says that Moses was not afraid, right? In Hebrews 11. Well, he did run away. He was running away for a reason, for his life, right? But was his fear overcoming? It wasn't. Okay? He did what he thought was right. So, I think that's one of the things that, you know, that I have to learn, is that fear is natural, but we can't let whatever happens in our lives, you know, something that causes fear, causes us to be afraid, to be overwhelming, so that we forget or that we leave God. Okay. So he goes on down to Midian, and he, in doing that, he's made a choice. He's not going to be with the Egyptians anymore, is he? His way of life, where he grew up. He's separating himself from that. Now, you think, you know, it's kind of like what Jeff said. Moses heard that. I can imagine Moses knowing the stories and knowing the history from Joseph and even before on up through, and knowing that, and he sides with that. He chooses that with to be with the Hebrews rather than the Egyptians. But God has a plan. The plan that God has is going to take a lot longer than what Moses thought he could do at that moment. Right? God's plan was going to save all the people. Perhaps, you think about Moses having a plan, and it was going to start with that one Egyptian right then and right there. Well, it wasn't God's plan. And what happens to Moses as he goes off to Midian, you can just see in the writing here and in the story, just God's plan, how it unfolds. Moses is pretty bold right then, wasn't he? He killed that Egyptian. You don't get much bolder, more fervent than he was at that moment, right? Where do we find him when we get, he's 40 years in Midian, and at the burning bush, what is Moses then? He's timid. He's not the same person that he was right here, right now. He's much more timid, much less bold, and you wouldn't even use that term to describe Moses when God needs him at the burning bush. So that we'll get into that next week. But just to see that difference, and what, in other words, could God use a general or a warrior to accomplish his will right then and right there? To us, you'd think the more bold, the more fierce, the more of a warrior, that's what they need right now to get the people out of there. But what does God want? What does God need to accomplish this? Exactly. He wants a lump of clay. I think Moses was much more that lump of clay at the burning bush than he ever was right here when he killed this Egyptian. But God is going to use him and build him up and convince him and use him in that way, and in where Moses is, you know, later on, 40 years later, when I don't know if God could have used Moses where he was at that point. I'm sure he could in some way, but this was God's plan through all of this. Yeah, that's right. There's a whole lot that needed to happen. That's a real good point. A whole lot more than just Moses needed to change. That's a good point. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. I was forgetting about Acts 7. That's very good. Thank you. So Moses escapes down to Midian. The last verses of chapter 2. He escapes down there. What happens to him in this 40 years while he's down there? I mean, 40 years. That's half a lifetime for us, right? So what happens in this time? Well, Who does he meet down there? He travels down there, sits down by a well, and a bunch of ladies, women come up, and they're drawing water out for their flocks and so forth. Turns out they're the family of Reuel. And so they're drawing water out, and apparently what tended to happen was they would draw all the water out for their flocks, and the shepherds, the guys would come along and take all that water and take care of their flocks, and then these girls would have to draw up their own water again and do it all over again. And so Moses comes along and he's there and he sees it. And what does he do? He helps them out. He protects them and lets them have the water that they drew there. And so these girls go back to their father and their house and tell him the story. He says, well, where is he? You know, bring him over here. Let's break bread. Let's have him over. So they go, so he comes over, and as a result, he marries one of them. Reuel gives him one of his daughters, Zipporah, for a wife for Moses. So Moses marries Zipporah, and in this time period, he has a son, names him Gershom, which means sojourner. What Moses is right now, isn't he? He's a man without a home, a country. So he flees to Midian, and he's hurt, taking care of flocks and sheep. He marries Zipporah, has a son. All this happens down there in Midian. All right, now through all this time, where's the rest of his brethren, the Hebrews? Yeah, they're in slavery. Once they were guests of Egypt, then they were a threat, and now they're slaves doing the bidding of the empire there. And it's not easy for them, right? And they're groaning, they're crying out in verse 23, chapter 2. They sigh because of the bondage. They cried out because of the bondage. And God did what? Verse 24. Does he know what's going on? Yeah, he knows. He's known for all these years. So God hears their groaning and remembers his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he takes notice of them. And he hears them. He knows what's going on. And that brings us to the close of chapter 2. We'll start with chapter 3 on Wednesday night with Mike. Oh, that's singing, isn't it? Oh, no. No, it's not. I'm sorry. We did that. We'll start with Mike on Wednesday with chapter 3. So read chapter 3, chapter 4. Be prepared for that. Any comments? Other comments? Yeah, that's right. That's it. That's right. That's exactly right. That's a good point. You know, we get comfortable with our lives and, you know, everything's as it was yesterday is the same today, and we get comfortable, we get used to it, and getting outside of that box is difficult, isn't it? Getting outside, pushing ourselves to do something that we haven't done before. So I'm kind of hated by a bunch of the ladies here right now because one of the things that, I don't know, I needed to count, there's probably about 20 ladies that are going to do something next quarter that they've never done before. And they're going to teach a class to an adult class back there. It's tough to do something that you're not used to. That's a hard thing. But it will help you grow. It will help you to learn a little bit more about yourself. Michael talk about this. Did Moses have any idea he could do what was destined for him, what God's plan was for him? Not at that burning bush. Moses was throwing up excuse after excuse. I don't want to do this. There's no way I can do this. But anyway, we'll talk about that Wednesday. Thank y'all.